This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
I first realized I was bisexual because me and my girlfriend were both finding ourselves attracted to the same man.
There is a sense of a circularity, a spiraling.
You know, I would hitchhike. I got caught hitchhiking when I was like 10, and my parents were all freaked out.
And we really liked each other as well as the man, and we were like, hey, why should we compete over him? We could both have him at once. And we tried that, and, you know, in some ways it worked, in some ways it didn't.
It's a sense of a circularity.
And for me, it's thrilling, and I guess.
I never would have thought I would have felt this.
How the world has shrunk. How the world has shrunk.
The spiraling.
And when we explored that, we realized that we were attracted to each other as well, and not just the man.
Hello again. And you have tuned in by accident or by intention to Hitchhiking Off the Map. And this is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller from our small padded cell under the redwood trees in Sebastopol, California. And we bring you stories about journeys.
Journeys, which is sometimes somebody's whole bloomin' life. And sometimes it's kind of absurd or maybe profound. And this time we have two stories, both about Eros, the erotic, which on public radio kind of just means talking about it.
Talking about the issues.
The issues. We could spend our final half hour on the public airwaves making low moaning sounds, which might be kind of fun. But instead, I guess we'll just sink down to a more intellectual level.
I guess we should say we are vitally interested in what happens in the news, the issues around gender and environment and peace and justice and all those things. And I do get a raging headache at the news just like I'm supposed to. But as storytellers, we have to start with people.
And we'll sort of let the journalists work out the categories.
They can do it. My garden just doesn't grow that way. First story.
Lorraine Hutchins is a sturdy woman in her mid-50s. She's administrator for a nonprofit company, but she's best known for the book she co-edited, By Any Other Name, Bisexual People Speak Out. You'll see her at rallies or workshops, but I talked with her in her cute little house among plants in a suburb of Washington, D.C. I had just one question, really simple-minded. How did you get to wherever you are?
The world of Lorraine. My name is Lorraine Hutchins, and I'm a fourth-generation Washingtonian, which is rare. And I have the rare privilege of growing up as a white minority in a majority black town. I grew up here in the civil rights era. My mom took me to Women's Strike for Peace marches. My grandmother marched with her high school class for the women's right to vote when President Wilson was in the White House. I went through all the Vietnam moratorium. I'm a child of D.C. Our church was a Methodist church that was white that became black when I was growing up because of white flight out of the city into the suburbs. And my parents and my grandparents were the only white people in the church who stayed and said, a church is for the people that live around it, and we will make it that, and we will not cede ground to prejudice and racism. So I became the only white kid in my Sunday school class, and the church became a place for civil rights organizing. And it was this feeling of interracial solidarity and fierceness and passion for people's dreams. And what I learned a lot more from church than Christianity, because somehow I've always been a pagan soul, and it just never took. Although I think Jesus is my friend. Jesus is a wonderful brother, but I have a pagan soul. Maybe Jesus is pagan too, I don't know. But the political passion that there's stuff that you can put your life on the line for and it matters. And people can be moved by hope and by vision if they keep their eyes on the prize. I was a product of a mixed marriage, a Yankee mom. They call us Yankees when we go north from D.C., even though we see D.C. as kind of borderline. But my dad's from Georgia, so we went down south. My most vivid memory is actually, again, when I was a young teenager, and my uncle, who was a Methodist minister, drove us down this road. Again, this is a political memory. And we were just, you know, touring around outside Atlanta in the burbs, which was then the country. And he pointed out a well, on a road, an old country road, and said, there's six nigger bodies down that well. And that's what he said. And, you know, it just this feeling that, and then later, years later, he started feeling guilty about that. But this is, I'm talking about early 60s. And he was bragging. And he was just giving us the local news. There's a chapter in a book called Telling Tales Out of School by Kevin Jennings. And my story was like looking at me as the editor of the high school newspaper in 1965, 66, and then addressing it to the students who were editors and producers of their high school TV show 30 years later. And what happened was I wrote to them because I found out that their same-sex marriage show was being censored on the by the county school board. And I wrote to tell them that in 1965, I had printed a story that my girlfriend, she later became my lover, but we didn't know it at the time because we didn't know we could be attracted to women. It took a couple more years. But my girlfriend had written a story about Batman and Robin being revived in the 60s from the 30s Batman and Robin movies. And all she did was say that Batman and Robin were part of a homosexual subculture. She used homosexual as an adjective. That got the paper locked up in the school safe in the vice principal's office. He seized all the copies he thought, except we had saved back a lot of copies in our car from the printer, and we started giving out the copies that he hadn't seized. And he called me down to the office, and he said, homosexual is not a word that students are supposed to be able to say. And I'm like, yeah, we do. I mean, I was blushing, I was ashamed, and I was afraid my mother and dad would get mad, and I was scared that the principal would discipline me. But, you know, it was 65, 66, and students were beginning to get militant. We weren't allowed to talk about the Vietnam War in civics class. Do you believe we were not allowed to talk about the war? I went away to school in the Midwest, and I did a junior year abroad in Oxford, the same year that Bill Clinton was in Oxford, but I didn't smoke dope with him. When I graduated in 1970, I was planning to escape to Canada with my fiancé, who wanted to avoid being drafted, but we broke up, and I didn't get married, and I still never have. I'm 54 now. So instead, I came back to D.C., and I started volunteering at the D.C. Runaway House. I eventually created income-producing jobs for myself and became part of a collective for 10 years that ran a cluster of community youth services. But in a way, we were doing the work of the society of, like, containing the dissent to a manageable level. And that became frustrating after a while. And then I started getting more cynical. I mean, I think it's good that we create models, and we have to create models. But if we make the mistake of thinking that those models can replace the system peacefully, we're putting too much energy into creating a little utopia that is never going to challenge the systemic problems that we need to really address. And it's not going to change things for the vast majority of people. What happened in the mid-80s with the AIDS crisis, personally affecting me because a lot of the people I loved and still love are gay and lesbian and bi and transgendered. What happened is that I started thinking about sexuality issues and gender issues as I had in the early feminist movement. People who were bisexual, like myself, started understanding our identity as much more of a political, public identity rather than as a private thing. And I became one of the founders of the bisexual movement. And so I started then getting more into sexuality education as well as advocacy and realizing really that it's about sexual liberation for all people. It is not about a sexual orientation freedom movement, regardless of what some more conservative, reformist, lesbian, and gay politicians will tell you. It just, there's many ways in which people's negative reactions to gay people is a really generalized erotophobia, sex phobia. It's not, I don't think, really rooted in hating gay people. It's rooted in being afraid of the beauty of the energy of sexuality, erotic power within all of us as living beings. And that's where we have to work from. But it comes out in homophobia often, or I think woman hating, which is very related. I think bisexuality is the most ordinary natural, normal thing there is, and that we learn to suppress it a lot, most of us. I don't think everybody is bisexual. I think that's by chauvinism, because I don't think everybody needs to be anything. I think there's a beautiful diversity and a spectrum. But I think that the reason that bisexuals are so invisibilized is because we'd have to be more sex positive as a culture to acknowledge that. So personally, I just became bisexual by waking up to the possibilities in my life. I've been in an open polyamorous relationship with Andrew for over 6 years, and it's been the longest relationship of my life, and it's been, of course he's going to walk down the stairs now that I'm saying this. It's been the, it's cool. It's been the best relationship and the most conflictual relationship I've ever had. I had a beautiful experience this Christmas. Sarah and Andrew and I went home to Andrew's family for Christmas in Cleveland, and I was saying goodbye to his mother, and I was hugging her, and I said, thank you for being you and for being so accepting of us, because she let us use her room, her bedroom, and a guest room, and she didn't care who slept where. She let us work it out. We were having a fight, and she left and took a walk so that we could have a fight in privacy and work it out. She was just being amazingly sensitive to supporting an alternative triad relationship of her son and two women who were all involved in a three-way family relationship that had been going on for several years, and she knew about that. And so she hugged me back and she said, it's all right. I love watching how you three take care of each other, and that makes me happy. So that made me feel great, because most parents aren't able to be that validating of relationships that they would never choose themselves. I think the bridge is really being more sensitive about translation and adaptation and meeting people where they're at. I'm learning that more. Yeah, I mean, I went through a period in the 80s of being a brat. You know, I created my Wonder Woman with a hard-on persona at Pride parades. And I'm still Wonder Woman with a hard-on, but I'm learning to be more of a teacher who has a bigger repertoire, so that I don't have to shock or confront people as, well, it didn't work. I mean, completely. It works, you know. So I think that you don't use the word masturbation. You use fitness and health. You don't use sexual healing. You talk to people about trying to improve their energy level and their breathing. I did a workshop at a Unitarian congregation in Madison, Wisconsin. And we had a room and we were sitting in a circle. And I started off by telling them, I bet you think that this older fat woman with gray hair can't teach you anything about sex. And that was the exact right thing to say, because it brought out their projections or their stereotypes of me right into the open. And I talked to them about, kind of the issues that people who are aging and people, I mean, we're all aging, but people over the age of youth glorification in the society, and people who are outside the norm in terms of being fat or differently abled. And it really brought together the room, because there was enough people in the room that identified out as, misfits that didn't belong, that me outing myself as feeling like a misfit helped people relax and feel safe with their own scaredness about talking about sex-positive spirituality. And we just ended up just turning around and giving each other shoulder rubs. That was perfect for that group. Shoulder rubs was incredible, and it really connected people. There was no need to do anything more than shoulder rubs. Shoulder rubs was what was right. Anyway, I was going to say, you know, my sexual energy completely changed after menopause. It's like I open up from my heart first, and then my genitals get involved, whereas before my genitals were like thump, 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 driving it. And that's real different than when I was younger. When I was younger, I was more into, I don't know, sex for the joy of sex. It's just not, I've done a lot of that, and it's just, so I guess it's like been there, done that. Does that sound jaded?
I asked Lorraine, Did you go to your senior prom?
No, we had an alternative prom at DuPont Circle, and we made pink passion fruit jello in this big laundry tub, and we all sat around and smoked joints with these gay men from DuPont Circle because we felt like misfits. People are changing. People are becoming more loving and open and accepting of diversity. I mean, it's all hanging in the balance, and it's all very scary. And it's becoming, I mean, the stakes are getting higher in terms of people's sense of insecurity. But things like 911 are just a wake-up call for people to realize, you know, that the emperor never had any clothes. And I do feel that there is a transformation, and it may go on way past my lifetime, and I may have no sense of the next stage or the next stage after that. But I definitely feel there's a momentum. I feel it in my bones. That's all I can say.
In Tacoma Park, Maryland, we were talking with Lorraine Hutchins.
Lorraine's book, By Any Other Name, Bisexual People Speak Out, which she co-edited, is available at bookstores. And, you know, whether this is an issue that speaks deeply to you or just kind of makes you want to throw your cat at the radio, I have to say that it is really an honest and fascinating book.
I was struck by Matthew Fox's comment last week when he was talking about refocusing religion to think about sex not as primarily a moral problem, but as a spiritual theophany was the word he used.
I'm thinking of those amazing trips we take in our adolescence, the first date, the first kiss, you know, just moving your lips very slowly, that endless 2 inches to the other person's lips, or the first time I actually held hands with a girl in eighth grade church camp. I don't think it's just about hormones or hoping that tonight you might get a little tension relief.
Oh, there is that.
Yeah, there is that. There is that. But approaching something very foreign, very alien, and then gradually discovering, well, actually, this feels like home.
We'd like to invite you to contribute a story. How about your first date story? Send us a note through our website at www.independenteye.org and tell us about it.
Or if the second date was more interesting, you can add to our next story. This is called Sleeves to Turkey.
Wow, long time.
Long time.
What, 3 years?
You moved out here in
right
what?
After Kevin was born, yeah. I'm sorry we haven't stayed in touch. I mean, new house, new kid. You lose touch.
Well, actually, I had a couple of trips to Sacramento, but I couldn't get over to the Bay Area. I thought maybe I could. I ought to call Jean, but it didn't work out. Well, I don't know what to say.
Just hello.
Hello. So how's Mac? Jody, the little bitty one.
Not so little bitty now. They're great. Mac's working too hard. His team is developing a new video game. Search for the Lost City.
Huh. In Philadelphia.
And the restaurant's doing okay?
It's picking up. Not great, but it'll survive. I've been kind of distracted from business. So, well, the funeral was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And basically, I was just kind of freaking out. So I spent 3 days hassling my staff, put everything on hold, and then just took off. Tucson to visit Tim and Cheryl, LA for Arturo, and here. And then I'll be stopping in Chicago, and then back to home. I'm trying not to get really heavily involved with myself.
It's good to see you.
You met him, didn't you, Dave?
Just briefly, I think.
Yeah. At that time, we were just seeing each other. Then about 2 years ago, Groundhog Day, in fact. Was that after you moved?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we really made a commitment. It was great. And like about 3 months later...
Did he already know that he was positive?
I think so. He wasn't always totally honest. But who is?
More coffee?
Sure.
You know, actually, to be perfectly honest, he was a real son of a bitch.
Coffee?
I'm fine. I mean, I guess I had to go on this trip to try and stop being very bitter. Find a sense of family, whatever. You ought to be able to order up a transformational experience. 2 weeks, economy, coach, if you had the right travel agent.
I think it doesn't work that way.
Well, we're off to a rollicking finish. I'm sorry. I really want to talk to you, here, now.
Hey, we're friends, remember? You're not required to be jolly.
Actually, Dave was not a son of a bitch. Not all the time. It's just, if it was intimacy you wanted, you'd get more of that from a turtle. But then he'd surprise you. You remember when I called, and Mac was flying somewhere, but you said, come on over to supper. So I did. And then Jody went off to bed. And
we were just getting up to go, and I got the call about my dad.
He had a stroke or something.
And I said, just hold me. And you did. Of course I remember.
Well, and you know Dave was really jealous. I mean, like paranoid sometimes. And so I came home late and I said, I'm home. And he said, what time is it? Late. He was not thrilled. He said, where were you? And so I told him. And I told him we'd hugged and you talked about your dad and his shipping.
He sold insurance.
Like on cargo.
Shipments of stuff. Yeah, I told you I remembered him talking about insuring 37,000 sleeves shipped to Turkey. The memory in his daughter's heart, the commerce of sleeves to Turkey.
You remember that? All that stuff you talked about?
Of course I remember.
And I told this to Dave. I said it was totally innocent, and yet at the same time it was, God, the most intimate times I've ever had with any human being. It was suddenly being family.
It was.
And he just said, I love you. That was the one time he ever said that. It was kind of nice to hear. That night was something special. It was family, and you go over to a friend's house for dinner and come back realizing, hey, it's not about me or what I'm getting in this relationship. It's about family. And that really opened me up in a lot of ways. Maybe too much.
Anything else?
We're fine.
Yeah, so he got sick, and I took care of him. And the last 5 months, it was very difficult. He didn't have insurance, and of course mine didn't cover, but I paid quite a lot. But the drugs didn't work. They don't always work, despite the miracles of modern advertising. And then he went to intensive care. And they wouldn't let me be with him. Only his immediate family. I mean, come on, Jean. I washed him and nursed him and cleaned him, wiped him for months and...
What about his mom and dad? Wouldn't they help?
He would not allow me to ask them. He didn't want to be a burden to his family.
His family?
God, Jean, what does it take to be family?
All those sleeves. There must have been about 5, and I imagine this huge, like, pirate ship with heaps and heaps of sleeves. All colors. And I thought, what do they do with it? Do they just wear sleeves in Turkey? Do they do something with them that's really strange? And I saw myself sailing along with the sleeves to Turkey. And we'd get there, and I'd toss them out to all the people calling, we need sleeves. And they'd have sleeves.
I'm sorry to lay that on you. Sort of like a little mouse gifts my cat leaves on the step. You know, I've actually got tons of funny stories about the restaurant.
Gil, the gift is whatever's in your heart. It's the giving.
Will we stay in touch?
That's why God gave us email.
More coffee?
Want to split a piece of that cheesecake?
We were listening to Sleeves to Turkey. The actors were Laurie Waters and Paul Meredith.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map, a production of The Independent Eye.
So, at the end of the show, I was thinking about the beginnings of Eros. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the story of my mother meeting my father, which was my own personal beginning. My mother had left the farm in Iowa, and she was working in the front office of a machine shop, sheet metal shop. And, of course, the machinists in the back, all guys, of course, would use any excuse to come up to the office where the ladies were. So one day, somebody was a little careless and had a minor disagreement with one of the machines and chopped off his finger. And into the office comes the man who is destined to be my father. There was an accident. Someone got hurt there. Oh, what happened? Asked my mom-to-be. See for yourself, said my dad, and he placed the spare finger directly on her desk. This was the beginning of an intense, problematic relationship, which generated, eventually, this radio show. Next week, how do you walk through the world with an open heart? Moshe Yasser. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. Peace and joy.
And as long as we're working from this base of fear that we have to have abstinence-only education and people have to be abstinent until they're married, which is what the government policy is right now, that you're advocating people not have sex until they're 27. A lot of the average age of getting married is like 26, 27. And so we're in this place where we don't have permission to feel ourselves naturally as sexual beings, and so it becomes a gay-straight so-called problem or whatever, rather than looking at the fact that we really are significantly, all of us as a society, distressed about sex.